Good afternoon. It's 12:07. This is Midday Matters on WBOY Fort Wayne. I'm Sean Beter. Very glad to be with you on this Tuesday afternoon. We have a very special program. We're going to be chatting about financial planning on this edition of Midday Matters. With me in studio, it's Susan Burns. Susan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean. Yes, we're doing something a little different today with a show that's been pre-recorded, and so if we hope our listeners get a lot of good information, but we won't be taking calls. And in fact, I'm going to read a little disclosure here so that we have all our ducks in the proper rows today. So the information discussed on Midday Matters today should not be construed as personalized financial planning or investment advice. There's no guarantee that the views and opinions expressed during Midday Matters will come to pass. Investing in the stock market involves gains and losses and may not be suitable for all investors. Always consult with the appropriate advisor before making any investment or planning decisions. So with that as almost an appetizer, I'm glad to say we're joined today by Janine Harold from Phillips Financial Services. Hi, Janine.
Hi, and thank you for having me today.
Janine, we really appreciate you being with us. This is a show we've been trying to get together for quite a while now, and we know there are, as Susan mentioned, some specifics we can't quite get into, but we wanted to talk a little more broadly today, get some of the basics out to our listeners. Tell us, the most basic question here is, what do you do? What does a financial planner do?
That's a good question, because financial planners can do a variety of things. It's a very broad concept. And so there are a lot of people out there calling themselves financial planners, and they may be doing different things and providing different services, which can sometimes be a little bit confusing for people. But I tend to think of somebody, if somebody calls themselves a financial planner, that they are somebody who looks at a person's situation from a broad, multidisciplinary perspective. They aren't just doing investment management. They aren't just selling life insurance. They aren't preparing wills and so forth. That's what an attorney does. But they're looking at a person's in total financial picture in the context of their goals and objectives. They are looking at their investments. They're looking at their tax situation, their estate planning documents like wills and so forth. They're looking at all their insurance policies and contracts and so forth. And with all of that, doing some analyses and helping the person understand where they are now and where do they want to be based on their goals and objectives and how are they going to get there. And helping them understand that situation and implementing tools and strategies to achieve financial goals.
So this is a person who is basically providing kind of a broader perspective on an individual's or a family's financial well-being, basically.
That's what I would associate with somebody who actually says, I'm a financial planner. Yes.
We brought you in today to kind of get some of these basics because, you know, I think a lot of folks, especially having gone through really difficult economic times, they think that, you know, this is kind of on the bottom of the list, or this isn't even on the list. You know, we have to pay rent first. We have to get the basics in our family financial picture first. When people are thinking about, well, maybe it's time to think more critically about our financial picture, think longer term on our financial picture. When would you say they need to seek out somebody like you, a financial planner?
Most financial planners would say, gosh, the day you get out of college, the first thing you ought to do is find that financial planner and work with them for the next 45 years or more. But obviously, people don't tend to do that. So generally, what happens is we see many people come to us when they have had a life-changing experience. They're getting married. They're getting divorced. They just had a child. They just had a baby, or they're pregnant. They're going to have a child, and they start to think, you know, we need to make sure things are in order. Mm-hmm. Or there's been a death in the family. It could be a spouse. It could be parents. They've inherited money now. So it's these kinds of life-changing experiences, changing jobs, oftentimes has people coming to a financial advisor because they now have decisions to make about the employee benefits they had and what are they going to, or are they going to a new set of benefits? What do they need? What holes do they need to fill? That sort of thing. So that it's oftentimes those life-changing experiences that drive people to financial planners. But it also it can be and should be this realization that I want to retire someday. Am I on track to do that? And sometimes we get people in almost a panic. I want to retire in 2 years. That's a little late, although better late than never. But that is a reality. Often we see people, put a specific age in there, but somewhere in their 40s, maybe their early 50s, starting to think in terms of, wow, yes, it's not that as far away as I might think.
Why do you think that is? It's just, is it that realization one day that I haven't been managing my money as well as I should, or managing it at all, or they're at a point where they're thinking about retirement now, and so now's the time.
It could be both of those things. Mm-hmm. It also could be this money driving sort of thing where when we're in our 20s, we're just trying to get that first job. We're getting married. We're having children. We have no money. And maybe 15, 20 years down the road, now we're starting to see some of these immediate needs have been met, and so now we're planning for the next phase. So we have a little bit of money to do something with. Now, I would say that's not necessarily the best way to look at it, because there are things you should be doing regardless of what amount of money you have or don't have. It's almost more important if you don't have money, but you have responsibilities to make sure that you have appropriate life insurance. Hmm. You know, if you have a little child, if you have a spouse that's depending on you, the fact that you don't have money is why you really need to be trying to get some, make sure you have life insurance and disability insurance and those kinds of things that the financial plan will help you answer. Well, what is it that I need? Where are the holes? What's my employer providing? Those kinds of things. So it isn't just a money-driven thing, but oftentimes that's what happens is people, they're so busy trying to get the money together, they don't focus on these other things that they should be focusing on. Another thing is they really should be looking at getting their wills and advance directives, whether they think they need those or not. Everybody needs advance directives because you need to give the direction to somebody to have the authority to act on your behalf should you become critically ill and can't act for yourself. So those are things you need to have. And you might be able to just go to an attorney to get those things done. But oftentimes people don't even realize until they do a financial plan that they need these things. So it's kind of what comes first, the chicken or the egg. But there are things you need, even if you don't really have much money or any money, that people are overlooking.
We're talking today with Janine Harold, a certified financial planner, and unfortunately, because this program is pre-recorded, we cannot take your calls, your emails, or your Facebook posts today. When we do this program in the future, of course, we'll ask you for questions beforehand, but we hope you'll stick around. There's a whole lot more to come. And before we have about 5 minutes before we go to break, when folks are get to that point when they decide that, okay, maybe it is time to seek financial planning, seek these services. What's your recommendation for actually going out to find them? Because there are so many financial services organizations, even just here in Fort Wayne, and so many, of course, across the country. It seems like it could be a little bit daunting to find the right fit.
There are several things you can do, Sean, to find that correct, that good fit. One of the things that I recommend is talk to people that you know. It could be family members, coworkers. Talk to people that you know, especially people that you think have done a good job with their money management, and ask them, well, are you working with somebody? Find out who they're working with. So referrals. If you are working with an attorney, if you've been getting estate documents done, or you're working with an accountant, you could ask them. Sometimes they're reluctant to give referrals, but they might give you two or three names. They oftentimes won't give you a specific recommendation of one person, but they'll give you two or three names usually. So get some referrals. You can surf the web. Mm-hmm. You can ask for financial planners in the area and start looking at websites and just kind of get that feel for what do you think. You can go to seminars or classes and get people that way. You can look at ads and so forth. But my recommendation is you get your two or three firms and commit yourself to interviewing two or three firms before you make a decision. Maybe more than that. But really commit yourself to, because once you look at these several firms, you will start to see the differences and you will start to get, I think, a feel for, I click with this person, this firm feels right for me, I don't click with this one, this doesn't seem what I'm looking for.
So you're saying, do actually shop for firms. Don't just go with the first group you chat with.
Unless you have a very, very strong referral from somebody that you really respect and everything they're saying is meshing with what you're looking for, then you might go to that firm and interview them and make sure that, yes, this tracks out. Otherwise, if you're kind of going in cold, go to two or three firms and before you make a decision.
It seems like the suggestion there too is you need to know a little bit about what you're looking for in a financial planner as well. Do you find in people that you talk with that maybe they don't know what's exactly what they're looking for when they seek out these services, or do they usually have something of an idea?
I would say, Sean, that they usually have somewhat of an idea. What I would recommend, for example, some people come to us because they want their money managed. They are retiring or they're going to another job and they've got a portfolio of money that they want managed. Now they've got their 401k that they're going to roll over. I want my money managed. They have that idea. We may suggest to them, have you considered a comprehensive financial plan? Our perspective might be, you need a broader picture here. But they've come in with this idea of, I want my money managed. Other people may say, I just had a baby. I need life insurance. That's really what I need. That's what I'm coming for. And again, depending on what the financial planning firm does, they may say, great, here's life insurance. And some may say, great, here's life insurance, but should we think about a financial plan? It depends on what the firm does, but I'd say most people do have that idea. What I would suggest they do, though, is go to the firm and ask an open-ended question, what are the primary services that you provide? Because if you go in and you say, I want A, B, and C, the financial planner is likely to say, guess what? I provide A, B, and C. And now you don't have a good feel for what is really their niche. And you want to understand what their niche is. And then you want to understand if your service, if your need, it fits in with their niche as a consumer.
We're talking today with Janine Harold. And unfortunately, we can't take your calls, your emails, your Facebook posts, your tweets today because this program is pre-recorded. We do need to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
On the next Fresh Air, the widening war in Syria. The leader of the Lebanese political and military group Hezbollah has declared his support of the Syrian president against the rebels. And the war is spreading into Lebanon. Fighters from other countries are coming to Syria. We'll talk with Robert Malley, the International Crisis Group's program director for the Middle East and North Africa. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Did you know that you can support a significant community service while at the same time raising the profile of your business? You do both when you underwrite programming on WBOI. It's affordable and effective. To find out more, contact Peggy Gaylord at 918-1094.
So Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Reinbold and Anderson, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC, local financial advisors who help people just like you. More information on Reinbold and Anderson on the web at reinboldandanderson.com. Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Indiana Tech Law School, opening in Fort Wayne, August 2013. Information on admissions and curriculum online at indianatech.edu/law or 855-TECH-LAW.
Welcome back. It's Midday Matters on WBOI at Fort Wayne. I'm Sean Beter along with Susan Burns, and we're talking this hour with Janine Harold, CFP from Phillips Financial, talking about, what financial planning is, who needs it, and we'll get into some of the nitty-gritty a little bit later on in the program. Unfortunately, because this show is pre-recorded, we cannot take your calls, your emails, your Facebook posts, or your tweets today. When we do a version of this program in the near future, we'll ask for your questions beforehand. Again, Susan Burns is with me. Susan, we've been having a great time so far.
We have. And Janine, I'm going to pick right up from where we left off before the break with the idea that you should do that research to find the planner that's a good fit for you. And you'd mentioned some questions, and I want to put that back to you. What are some, is there like a checklist of questions people could take note of as they talk to people?
Yes, Susan, for one of my presentations, I did create a little checklist for people to ask certain kinds of questions.
How was that for a leading question?
Yes, there? That was a leading question. Thank you. And I do have that checklist. And I think if people call into the station or something, you could make that available to them. I'm not sure how they would.
Yeah, we can make it available on our Midday Matters page a bit later on.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So,
great.
So what kinds of things are on it?
Well, the checklist really has very open-ended questions. Now, I will admit some of the questions I've kind of put what I think are things you want to look for, what I think is a preferable answer, but really it's up to you to decide what's important to you. But earlier, before the break, we talked about it's important to ask the advisor what are the services that they focus on, what are their key services, because that will give you a clue as to are they providing the kinds of services that you're really looking for. So that's a key area, and again, that open-ended question. Another thing that you want to really understand about the firm is how is it structured? And we didn't really talk about this much, but here, if you're trying to do comprehensive financial planning, then you probably want to be looking for a firm that is registered as a registered investment advisor with the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC. Not an absolute requirement, but that might be preferable. So you want to understand, well, what's the structure? Is it a registered investment advisor? Is it a broker-dealer? Is it an insurance agency? And that sort of thing.
Let me interrupt you, because
yes,
that seems like it could be very confusing, because there are so many people, as we mentioned before, there are so many people offering financial advice, offering what could be perceived to be similar services. It seems like it could be difficult to kind of sort through all those designations.
Well, it could be. And this is really more how the firm is structured as opposed to the individual you're talking to. And it can be confusing. I would ask that open-ended question, get the answer, and then and ask if you can look at any of their disclosure documents. If they're a registered investment advisor, they will have disclosure documents. It's called an ADV, ADV Part 2. But ask for they'll tell you. They'll have the spiel. But anyway, I'd ask for that. And then the next thing I'd be asking for is, how are you compensated? And you're going to get a lot of information from that. That's important because it will give you a feel for what is that person being incented to do. One of the things I think happens as consumers is we're kind of our own worst enemies. we think we're going to go to this financial planner and they work for free, right? So, you know, we don't want to know about the compensation. We don't want them to really talk about it. And then they're sort of nervous about talking about it because, well, if I tell them I get paid, they're going to be turned off because, you know, no, we're in this business to make money, just like anybody else. And so what you need to get on the table is, how are you compensated? Do you charge a fee for the hourly service that you provide? Is it a package of services? Do you get paid a commission for selling me stocks and bonds? Do you get paid a commission from the insurance company that you're hooking me up on the life insurance or mutual fund companies? You want to understand that and try to get them to really explain that to you. That will help you understand kind of where you're going to be going with this service. And no one, I'm not going to say any one type is inferior to the others, but some are preferable depending on what services you're looking for. Again, if you're looking for a comprehensive financial plan, a truly objective, it's going to cover the waterfront, you probably want to be looking for something where they're going to charge you a fee for that plan.
Right.
So that's one thing.
Rather than
for.
Come out of what your investments are.
Right. Or your insurance policy that I'm going to sell you or whatever, because you want it to be objective and comprehensive. So that's a whole area. The other things that I think you should look for and ask questions about is, okay, so what happens if something happens to the financial advisor? You're sitting down with one person. What if you get hit by a truck? Well, what's going to happen? Is there somebody here that is going to know the situation that's going to be able to step right in and help me? You just want to understand how they...
You're looking for a backup plan.
Yeah. What's the backup plan? Very good. Yes. So you want to understand that.
Yeah.
Another thing that I think you want to understand is your gut. Pay attention to your own gut. If you walk in there and you're not comfortable for whatever reason, don't set that aside. Try to get a handle on, well, why am I uncomfortable? Is this really a good fit for me? Because ultimately, especially if you're going to this comprehensive, you want this comprehensive financial planner, it's kind of like going to the doctor. You know, if you go to the doctor and you're not going to take off your clothes, well, go to a different doctor. Go to a doctor that if you need to take off your clothes, you will take off your clothes. Now, we don't ask people to take off their clothes.
well, there's your name.
If the financial planner asks you to take off your clothes, you've got a problem.
That's a red flag.
Move right on. But the financial planner is going to be asking you a lot of questions. And even if it's somebody who just manages your investments, they need to be asking you a lot of questions about your goals and where is your money and how is this all going to work and what's your tax bracket, what's your income. Those are all things they need to know to do a good job for you. And if you're going to clam up because I don't really like this person, whatever, go to somebody else.
Sure.
So pay attention to your gut. Pay attention to the environment. Are you comfortable in this environment? Is this an office that I'm willing to come to?
Sure.
Over and over again.
Good. And as we're talking about getting to know this person you're interviewing or several people, because you want to go to several of them, I'm realizing we never asked for how did you get into this field, Janine? So tell us a little about your background.
Yeah, it was a roundabout way, which is what I'm guessing a lot of people, this is how they got into the business. Uh-huh. I worked for Lincoln Life for 15 years in the home office, a variety of jobs at Lincoln, management, marketing, product management kinds of things. And towards the end of that time, I was in the broker-dealer. Lincoln had a broker-dealer and they also had a registered investment advisor. And I got more and more involved with the registered investment advisor end of it and started to think, wow, I'd like to do this. And so at one point, I did move out of the home office. I then worked with the Lincoln agency as a registered rep and an investment advisor rep for the RIA. And then eventually I joined up with Rick Phillips, who was putting together a group of people, and we formed our own registered investment advisor. That was in 2004. Uh-huh. We joined up with another broker-dealer. Some of this is a little technical, I guess.
Sure.
But a couple of years ago, we severed all ties with any broker-dealer arrangement. And so we are now truly a completely independent financial planning firm.
Great.
Registered as a registered investment advisor.
We're talking today with Janine Harold from Phillips Financial, a certified financial planner. And unfortunately, we cannot take your calls, your emails, or your Facebook or Twitter posts today because this program is pre-recorded. We're going to take just a quick break for the news. Back in a few minutes. Stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
For this program on WBOI is provided by Lake City Bank, offering a range of financial investment and trust services for individuals, businesses, and nonprofit organizations through the Lake City Bank Wealth Advisory Group. Details at lakecitybank.com.
Good afternoon. I'm Katie Anderson with WBOI News. A federal judge has given a Catholic diocese in northern Indiana permission to keep some records under seal during a lawsuit by a former employee who says she was fired because she had in vitro fertilization. The order filed last week in federal court in South Bend covers personnel records, medical records, and financial records. Emily Herx's attorney did not oppose the motion by the Diocese of Fort Wayne, South Bend. The confidentiality clause covers both sides and applies through the pretrial phase when both sides share the evidence they might present during trial. The church says a court ruling would violate its religious rights. Federal court rules require good cause to be shown before records are sealed, and those steps can be challenged. A diocese spokesman says the move is routine. Indiana's Family and Social Services Administration is training child care providers on a series of changes approved by lawmakers this year. State lawmakers set new requirements that all employees and volunteers pass the national background check and be 18 or older. Primary caregivers will also have to complete training on safe sleep for infants and lay out safe transportation policies. The new law affects licensed homes, licensed centers, registered ministries, and other providers. The agency announced Monday it will mail information to providers and host a teleconference and webinars explaining the changes. The new laws take effect July 1st. And Ivy Tech officials say a proposed tuition hike will help the statewide community college system make investments in key areas, including more faculty and better equipment. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports.
The Ivy Tech Board of Trustees will vote Thursday on a tuition increase of $20 per credit hour over the next 2 years, $5 each semester. That's a more than 8% increase each year compared to the Indiana Commission for Higher Education's 2% recommendation. And it comes on the heels of a nearly 8% funding increase in the recently passed state budget. Yet Ivy Tech Chief Financial Officer Chris Rule points out that Ivy Tech only increased its tuition by $25 over the past 6 years.
We've been modest over the past few years, and ultimately there's some catch-up that needs to be done in key areas, and that's what we hope to direct the dollars for.
Ivy Tech student Christopher Glick says he was concerned about a portion of the tuition increase being set aside to fund more student activities because he didn't think there was adequate need.
I don't make use of it, but as was explained, a survey had been conducted and the consensus was most people are in favor of it, then that's fine.
Some students voiced concerns about possible Ivy Tech facility closures around the state. Rule says while those remain a possibility, a decision won't be made for some time. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
And it looks like we'll be seeing sunny skies today with a high near 73. Tonight, you can expect mostly cloudy skies with temperatures dipping down to 53 degrees. And looking at Wednesday, partly sunny skies with a high near 78. And there's a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms on Wednesday evening. And you can expect a low of 59 degrees. You're listening to Midday Matters on 89.1 WBOY and online at nipr.fm.
Good afternoon. It's Midday Matters Financial Focus on WBOY Fort Wayne. I'm Sean Beter along with Susan Burns. And this hour, we're talking financial planning with Janine Harold from Phillips Financial. She's a certified financial planner. Unfortunately, as we've mentioned before, we cannot take your calls, your emails, your Facebook posts, or your tweets today because this program is pre-recorded. Susan Burns, we talked a bit in the first part of this program about what a financial planner does, how to shop for a planner. We kind of want to move into some of the nitty-gritty now.
I think it's a good time for that. So Janine, fill us in on, we've talked about how you want to pick that financial planner and the feeling a sense of trust that you take your clothes off with them. But
metaphorically,
yes.
Yeah, we should be clear about that.
Your financial clothes.
There you go.
So now you've picked your person. What can a person expect for that next step?
That's going to depend, Susan, on what the services are that are being provided. So, for example, I think we spent most of this time really talking about a financial plan, sort of the comprehensive financial planning process, if you will. And again, the service can differ rather dramatically from planner to planner. So I think the best way is for me to tell you what we would put in a plan and what you would see. At the end of the day, what you would get, without going into the process too much, what would you get? You'd end up with a book, if you will, that actually shows you, lays out all of your assets and liabilities. We call that a net worth statement. And so we are attempting to understand everything that you have and everything that you owe. That's oftentimes in and of itself very eye-opening for people. They've never really done that. But then we also will have summaries of their life insurance policies. We ask them to bring in their life insurance policies. We want to look at their disability policies. We want to see what are their employee benefits. What is the employer offering along all of those lines? We want to understand if they work for a company with a 401k, how does that work? We want to see all of their different investments. So we're going to show them what those investments look like. We're going to give them an asset allocation of all of their different accounts, not just from one account or another account, but everything together. If it's a husband and wife, we put it all together and show it to them. So oftentimes just for them to see what all is laid out is very enlightening in and of itself.
I was going to say, depending on how things are going, that sounds like it could be enlightening and maybe traumatic if you're really digging into these things for the first time and putting it all in one place. That seems like it could be a big moment for a lot of individuals, a lot of families.
Some people have a pretty good feel for those things. We have people that they are keeping pretty careful spreadsheets and it's not, but other people they're coming in with their boxes of stuff and that's great too. And it's rather enlightening. The other thing is to help them understand how are your wills, advanced directives and trusts currently structured. Now we're not attorneys. We're not giving them specific advice on that, but we'll look at their will and we'll say, okay, well you have so-and-so as your personal representative. And it says that, everything goes to your spouse and then to your three children equally. And then there's this trust that says everything is really going to go into the trust. And the trust is deciding when the children are going to get this, their inheritance. They might get a portion of it at age 20 and then another portion at 30. We kind of lay those basic things out so they can see how it currently is structured. Then we're also we're making observations about how things are structured. Your last will was created in 1987. It covers two children and you really have four, those kinds of things. We actually get those kinds of things. Sure. We actually see those kinds of things. So we're making some observations. We're making some recommendations. What are the next steps? What might they want to do? We're also doing some modeling. So oftentimes people are coming to us because they want to know, can I retire? So now in the process, we're asking them questions about, well, when do you want to retire? What are you going to need to retire on? And we're helping them sort of figure some of that out. So we're doing some modeling that will then say, well, our observation is you have plenty of money to retire on. Retire now. Other people were saying, you are never going to retire. No, just kidding. But we are looking at those kinds, that kind of modeling, and then helping them structure, okay, you're a little short. to retire when you want to retire with the money, with the income that you want to retire. So now comes the fun part. How can we help you accomplish your goals? What steps can you take to accomplish those goals?
And Janine, does, as you're looking at that summary of assets and liabilities and all that, does that include things like what you owe in your house and credit cards?
Oh, yes, and absolutely.
All that kind
absolutely.
Of stuff.
Absolutely. And we try to get, and I think any good planner would do the same. They're trying to get as much information as they can. We're asking, we want to see the statements. Give us that credit card statement. Show us that mortgage statement. So that we really can see what it is. It's not just the dollar amount. We want to know what the interest is on. What is that interest rate that you're paying? Because that becomes part of the recommendations. You know, pay off this credit card first because it's, you know, 18%, and this credit card that's 5%, you know, just pay the minimum on that every month. So those are the kinds of things that you might actually see being recommended in a plan.
So it can be really big, long-term scope and really immediate nitty-gritty kinds of
things. Right. And the other thing about it is it's very tailored to the individual. A person might come in and say, well, I want to know that I can retire when I want to retire. And yes, we obviously are going to address that. But we may see some bigger issues with that 1987 will that they didn't think, you know, was anything. And we may say, you know, what you really need is you need an estate planning attorney to help you draft current documents. And that might be a bigger issue. Or it might be they're a business owner and they really have some issues on how are you going to move this business to the next generation. That's a huge issue. We work with business owners in that capacity. When can I retire? They don't even care. They're in business, you know. Business owners are like that. But they want to know how they can transfer their business.
I just wanted to remind our listeners that we're talking financial planning with Janine Harold from Phillips Financial. And as much as we know folks want to ask questions right now and want to email us or call us, unfortunately, this program is pre-recorded. We cannot take your calls, your emails, or your Facebook or Twitter posts today. Sorry, I just wanted to remind our listeners what we're doing today.
Right. And although, Sean, here's a thought. If they have something they would like to ask for a future show, email it on in, and we'll add it into the hopper for the next time we come to this topic.
Absolutely. Our email address is middaymatters@nipr.fm, and we'll remind you of that address at the end of the program. So when folks start this process, I mean, how long can they expect these initial meetings to take? How long does it take to really get that plan set up and running?
Good question, and that dovetails into another issue that I want to be sure we didn't leave on the table here, and that is, once this book is created, if you will, it's in writing kind of thing. It's an ongoing process. Mm-hmm. And so I think a good planner will help the person implement that plan and monitor and stay engaged with the person. You don't just hand them the book and they go home and now it sits on the shelf. So that is an important part of it. But how long does it take? In our firm, we start with, once the person says, yes, I'm going to do this with you, we start with what's called our fact-finding meeting, if you will. Other people may call it data gathering, that kind of thing. And that oftentimes can take a couple of hours, sometimes longer. Hmm. We ask everything, and we want the person to talk. And it isn't just, okay, let's talk about your credit cards, let's talk about what's in your will. It's also, what's important to you? What do you want to do when you retire? What do you want to do with the next 10 years? What's important to you about your kids? What are you trying to accomplish with your children? Is it important that you leave them an inheritance or not? Or are you trying to help them with all of their college or part of their college? Do you have charitable intents that you are important to? We want to understand what is important to that person about their money, because money is not an objective concept. It's very subjective. And so a good planner will get to those subjective issues and help the person with that. So they'll tailor the plan to get to that. So 2 hours or so. And then we go to work. It's maybe 4 to 6 weeks, sometimes even longer than that, where we are preparing that plan. And sometimes with more complex situations, we will actually engage the attorney they already have, their accountant. If they don't have those advisors in place, we have our group of people that we work with that we will engage, because there are legal issues, there are those tax issues, and we want to get good advisors to help us construct that plan. So we're doing that. So then the next meeting we have is when we present the plan. That too can be a couple hours, usually, two hours or so. So those are two meetings that are absolutely set. Then a couple weeks after we have we present the plan. Then after that, we have another meeting where we start on the implementation. And I'd say that can be an hour to 2 hours. That's the third meeting of this set thing. Beyond that, it really depends on, okay, what did we decide we were going to do? We give the person an implementation checklist, and we decide what are the priorities with them. I mean, we're collaboratively. Okay, what is important to you about? What's going to keep you up at night if we don't discuss it, if we don't address it? What are you willing to tackle first? It could be go to the attorney. All right, you're going to go to the attorney. By when are you going to go to the attorney? Okay, well, we'll check back with you to make sure you've gone to the attorney. So we may not have meetings with the client. We may just be checking back. Or it might be something we're helping them with, maybe their investments or really digging more into life insurance policies or whatever. And so then they may be coming back to our office. So, but I would say in an average situation, we're working over a year. My guess is most planners, it's kind of that way. It's kind of an engagement for a year at a time, if you will. And there might be, there's a minimum of 3 meetings from the time that the client has said they're going to work with us. And it may be 4 or 5.
So this is, well, obviously not a process that you get done in 1 day or 2 days. I mean, you're basically setting a precedent where, you know, this is ongoing. You're checking in. You're committing to a plan.
Right. And some plans are easier than others. You know, if you're a young person, you don't have 2 hours of stuff to talk about in the data gathering, you know, maybe not, you know, but for many of our clients, it is, there's a lot there. So yes, it is a process, but it's one that we have found with our clients. It's very enlightening and very rewarding. They come out of it feeling like, hey, I'm on track. And then after, you know, you get through those first few meetings, then it gets easier. You can tackle one thing at a time and so forth.
We have to go to a break in just a moment, but occasionally on this program, we have the folks from Financial Hope in Fort Wayne who do a different kind of work. But they often mention that sometimes folks are very, very shy in talking about their money with even within their own family, let alone somebody outside of it. Do you find that process to be difficult with people sometimes, even if they're seeking you out, or find that some folks haven't really had these conversations before?
That's a good question. I am guessing that people who are really, really shy probably don't go to financial planners, you know. But I think what we do find sometimes in this process is we're asking some questions, and it's kind of forcing them to think about what's really important to them, and how they're going to how they should be proceeding.
Respond to it.
Right.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is an enlightening thing between spouses. I mean, you know, we have had sometimes that kind of a little bit of a discomfort, if you will. Most of the time, though, it's not that big of an issue. I think what it can be sometimes more is the person comes in and they think they hand you a statement of their account, and they think that's what it's going to be, and you start asking questions, saying, "Well, let's see about this plan or whatever," and they weren't ready for that, and so then they're, "Well, all I wanted to do was tell me about this investment," and that's kind of that. That's where that interview process comes in. There's maybe a little bit of a disconnect, yeah. And as financial planners, we have to be careful in that introductory process to understand, well, what are they really looking for, and is that really a service that I provide?
We're talking today with Janine Harold from Phillips Financial, certified financial planner. And unfortunately, as we mentioned before, we cannot take your calls, emails, or your social media posts today because this program is pre-recorded. We'll continue the conversation after the break. Stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
The FBI has transformed over the last decade from an institution that fights drugs and organized crime into a bureau focused on intelligence and counterterrorism. So if that's the story of the last decade, where will the bureau go in the next decade under a new director? I'm Ari Shapiro, the future of the FBI, its leadership, mission, and challenges. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
This afternoon at 2 p.m. here on WBOI.
It's Midday Matters on 89.1 FM WBOI Fort Wayne. I'm Sean Beter. Glad to be with you on this Tuesday. With me, of course, Susan Burns, one of the usual suspects in this studio. And we're talking with Janine Harold from Phillips Financial. She's a certified financial planner.
And Sean, you know, saying certified financial planner, I don't think, Janine, we've asked you to explain what that title is all about. Give us a little background on what it means to say you are a certified financial planner.
Sure, Susan. And that can be an area of confusion for people as well, because anybody can say, "I'm a financial planner." I mean, that's a general term. Certified financial planner, or CFP professional, is an actual designation awarded by the CFP Board of Standards. And it's something you earn by going through a rigorous course of study or having achieved other designations that allow you then to sit for an exam. So there's an exam, there's a course of study, there's an exam that you have to pass, there are experience requirements. I think it's like 2 years you have to be in the business before you can actually call yourself a CFP professional. And then you also have to follow continuing education requirements. So you're always having to get more courses every year. You have to also agree to abide by a specific ethics code of standard, rules of conduct and their code of ethics. I'm sorry, I got that mixed up. And you also have to agree to abide by a very specific set of financial planning practice standards that, and really when we talked about the process of the financial plan, that kind of goes with their financial planning standards. So there's this whole body of rules and regulations, if you will, that somebody who has attained that designation also has to abide by. Now, many people who don't have that designation may say, "Well, I do all of those things too." It's not like they don't do those things. It's just that if you have that designation, then you have agreed to abide by that. And you've also agreed to conduct your affairs with your clients using a fiduciary standard, which means that you are placing their interests really ahead of your own. So that's what it is, and it is a very specific defined term, if you will, and that is a designation from the CFP Board of Standards.
I think we've done a good job of kind of laying out some of the basics of financial planning, but of course there are a lot of more specific areas we can touch on. And one of the things that I know you focused a lot on earlier was, you know, a lot of folks come to you and say, "How am I going to retire?" Or, "When am I going to retire?" Or, "How much do I need to retire at this comfort level?" So I want to put it to you, when you talk to folks, what are the top three, top five things that you see people doing incorrectly in their financial planning when they're looking ahead to retirement?
Sean, I think if I had to narrow it down to two or three key things, maybe not even just so much my clients, but in general the public, I think the first thing is we don't start early enough to plan for retirement. Now, we joked earlier about, I think, you know, everybody out of college ought to go and get their financial planner right away. And maybe that's not exactly true. But everybody, the day they graduate from college or get their first job, they should be saving for their retirement, whether they go to college or not. You get a job, learn to save a portion of every paycheck. And that would help a lot in the whole preparation for retirement. So that's one of the first things. The second thing is just in general, focusing on things you can't control, because it's more fun to focus on things like what's the stock market doing and what's going on in Washington. And those are, I'm not saying those aren't important things, but we don't have a lot of control over them. But we ignore the things that we could be focusing on. We get so caught up in how the stock market is behaving, and we don't get caught up enough in how much are we putting into the market or putting into our savings in some fashion. And that's really the bigger determiner of what we're going to have for retirement.
You're talking about taking the long view, because right. So often, you know, all this information is at our fingertips any moment we want it, and we're not day traders, so to speak.
Right. So it's not focusing. It's focusing on all this media stuff out there that talks to you about, oh, we should worry about this, we should worry about that. And I'm not trying to discount that. But what I am trying to say is, if we spent time focusing on the things we can control, is my will up to date? Are my beneficiary designations correct? Is my life insurance structured the way it should be structured? Do I have a good asset allocation for my investments? Those kinds of things. If we spent more time on that, I think for many people, the outcome would be much better. And those are things you have a lot more control over. Hmm. So focus on those things. So those would be the two things. Start early and stay focused on the things you can control.
For a lot of people, you know, listening, and we touched on this this earlier, for a lot of people listening, they may be able to start that process or get into that process. I mean, is there ever a point where it's just too late to be thinking about these things? Because I'm sure a lot of folks, you know, they haven't been able to save for retirement or invest like they'd like. Maybe now they can, but they're thinking, I'm 60 years old. I shouldn't worry about
Sean,
this.
Sean, it's never too late. It's never too late. One of the things I think a good financial planner will do is help a person break it down into chunks that they can reasonably manage, so that they're making progress. This is what I say, you know, we're making progress. We might not be at the finish line, but we're making progress, and anything you can do will make it better than keeping your head stuck in the sand. Hmm. So, for example, you might think, I want to retire. I'm 60. I want to retire at 62. And now you go to the financial planner and you have this shortfall. Well, at 60, if you're still employed, you could delay your retirement. That might be part of the solution. And maybe that isn't what you wanted to hear, but you still have time to act on that. So it's never too late. Or you might be able to start saving more in your later years. Some people can really sock away a lot after the kids are grown. It may be, okay, we're going to tell the kids now that we're done with these things, you know, that we just have to be realistic about what we can continue to provide to our adult children. And when it's laid out, you can make those decisions. But if you have your head in the sand, then it's a problem. So I think certainly while you're still working, it's great. But even if you're retired, there are things you can make that may be tough decisions, but there are things you can do to improve your situation for the future.
We're reaching the end of the program here, and we should mention that the information discussed on Midday Matters by Janine Harold should not be construed as personal financial planning or investment advice. There's no guarantee that the views and opinions expressed on this program will come to pass. Investing in the stock market involves gains and losses and may not be suitable for all investors. Always consult with the appropriate advisor before making any investment or financial planning decision. Janine Harold is an investment advisor representative of Phillips Financial Management, LLC, an investment advisory firm registered with the SEC. Thanks to all of our guests. Thanks to you for listening. I'm Sean Beter, and this is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, WBOY Fort Wayne. It's 1 o'clock.